All right, folks, welcome to ninoscorner.tv. I'm with Sargis Sangari. Did I say that correct?
Yeah, you're good. Sargis Sangari is good, yes.
Okay. And let me tell you, folks, this guy has an extensive background, huge resume. Background in military career, he's a retired lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army with over 20 years of experience. His military experience includes deployments in the Middle East, work with special operations, infantry, and SOF. Special operations forces. He also has diplomatic assignment in Kuwait as director of host and nation affairs. Also, you have the NECSE. Can you elaborate on what that is?
Yeah, first of all, it's good to be here. NECSC is a Near East Center for Strategic Engagement. It's my company. Actually, initially, when I put that thing together, was to try to get the U.S. forces to be able to have a larger footprint, in this case, U.S. Special Operational Forces and U.S. Special Forces in the Gulf states. And this is going back 2013 period before I even looked at a retirement in 2014. And then, of course, when I did all that paperwork, submitted it to the Army, there was somewhat of a fight between the Special Forces and the big Army itself on that particular concept. And when I realized that they're not going to use it, I told my boss at the time, hey, just, you know, I came up with the idea, just put it on my officer evaluation report, and I'm the one who presented it. And he did so, and I said, well, I could give you for free. You don't want it. I'll just bring it back and make it a major company and then charge you $1 million for the same information I could give to you guys for free right now. So the Near East Center became basically my company, which I established in 2014 on September 11th. And a recognition of the Americans that were actually murdered on our soil. Now, with that, and also the, still the first responders are still losing their lives because of the medical issues that they're dealing with. Now, the first mission we picked up was, of course, in support of the Assyrian Christians that were fighting against ISIS and ISIL at the time from 2014 to 2017 in both Iraq and Syria. And the Assyrian Christians, for those who don't know, are indigenous people of the Middle East. I'm an Assyrian myself, we escaped. My family came here from Iran after, of course, the Islamic Revolution. My wife's family came here from Lebanon after the Civil War, and it is what it is. It's the reality of what the Christians are dealing with and, of course, what the Jewish community dealt with on October 7th in the region. For the Assyrian Christians, actually, the Assyrian Martyrs Day is 7th of August, when the Iraqi army at the time that was led by a general, Kurdish general, actually attacked their own citizens, in this case, the Assyrian Christians, and conducted a genocide against them in 1933, which forced a lot of their members from Iraq to escape into Syria, where they established their homes along the Khabar Valley, which was a key node that the ISIS was fighting over. Against the other forces in order to take over, to have a line of basically supplies and communication secured in that region. So it's basically the bottom line of why establishing, and I also established the United Assyrian Appeal, which is a 501c3, which was the only way we could get funding and support to support the Christians so they can fight to survive in Iraq against ISIS at the time. Today, we're using it to still support the Assyrian Christians in Iraq. And in the past, we've also supported the Jacaranda Women Organization in Africa. And I do give advice to individual who's, you know, working on trying to see changes in South Sudan for the Christian nation there. Hopefully, with elections taking place December of next year, he's on the ballot. Hopefully, he'll be the next president of South Sudan.
All right, so we're going to get into this, folks. But first, get your trim. And we're going to talk about the Antifa connection with all this as well, right? Sargis, this is all kind of blended together, right? And the immigrant invasion or takeover under the Biden administration, letting in all these immigrants, these Muslims, happened first under Obama and Biden. Now we have a big problem here. They're in Dearborn. They're in Plano. These huge communities enforcing Sharia law. All of this ties in together, correct?
Well, actually, the people who initially really pushed the whole immigration, using it as a means to hold Europe hostage and also use it as what we call the new gold, new oil of the Middle East, were the Turks. Actually, in our first anniversary for the Near East. If folks go to the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement or NECSC.net and they Google search in their first anniversary, we talked about how Turkey is using immigrants for its advantage to hold Europe hostage. And Turkey, of course, if folks don't know, is actually the lead for the head of Muslim Brotherhood. Hamas itself, they
Wow.
conducted the operations in the region, is a Palestinian offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood. So Turkey, under Erdogan, President Erdogan, really has taken the concept of this Islamic caliphate that they would like to establish to go back to what the old Ottoman Empire was and have infused in their foreign policy. So it's part of the entire reason why the region is the way it is. A lot of people don't know that ISIS and ISIL actually survived and moved back and forth with supplies through Turkey when we were fighting against ISIS in 2014 to 2017. And keep in mind, this is a NATO ally, right? And they're the main reason, Turkey is the main reason why the current leader, Islamist leader in Syria, was able to be successful in his place. Now, when we talk about Antifa, there's a group called YPG. These are the YPG Kurds that have fought for generations against Turkey. They are a terrorist organization. In 2014, 20 through 2017, where we're advising the Syrian army force structures in both Iraq and Syria, the first time we lost a commander was in the Syria fight. And he was going to a he was asked to go to a peace meeting. He was a deacon in the church, the Syrian church in Syria, with the Kurds. Of course, the same Kurds invited him to a peace meeting, conducting an ambush against them. He survived the ambush. He was held as a captive, and eventually was killed. The young man who was with him was released. Four YPG members were convicted of that ambush murder. They actually confessed to it. At the time, Antifa US and Antifa Europe were actually advising and working and supporting the YPG Kurds that
Whoa. There
were a
was
terrorist
some
organization in Syria.
Antifa was consulting
Yes, they were consulting and supporting operationally on the ground.
Muslim Brotherhood.
They would be considered Muslim Brotherhood if you're working with when it comes with Turkey. If they're YPG, they're socialist communists. So, but they do have elements that
So
are
there,
tied to
we
Muslim
could safely
Brotherhood.
say they're working together.
Yes, the communists and also the Muslims in various different nations work together. Even though a lot of people may not know,
To
that was
overthrow.
that was originally how they worked together during the Iranian Revolution. The Islamists and the communists worked together. Of course, Islamists, once the Shah was gone, turned the guns over, killed all the communists, and took over. And that's pretty much what the sense is. And we always tell folks, even here in the U.S., when you have communist elements working with Islamist elements, eventually they're going to turn on you. But unfortunately, the communist and socialist elements, you might call it, do not understand that concept. The Islamist will do what he has to do in order to keep himself in hold in position of power. I know that with what's happened in Israel, with now the release of the hostages, and this is really a ceasefire. It's not so much peace. We talk about maybe getting a functional peace, but there's been a ceasefire with Lebanon for years, even after the killing of all those Hezbollah leaders and operators. Even now, you still have individuals in the ceasefire that conduct operations inside of the borders of Israel and Lebanon against Israel. So just because you're at a ceasefire doesn't mean that they're going to put down their guns and they're going to change who they are. The reason I think that Turkey was able to, as a leader of Muslim Brotherhood, put pressure against Hamas currently is because Turkey realizes in the long term what is worse for Israel. Is it an Iran that is pretty much inept right now, incapable of doing anything, or is it a Turkish Islamist Muslim Brotherhood sitting on the borders of Israel in Syria, and also now having pressure on Egypt, where Egypt initially conducted a coup, got rid of the Islamic Brotherhood. But as of last year, they started releasing a lot of those prisoners because they were getting pressure from Turkey. And as long as they're in a position where financially they need the U.S. to be kind to them, they'll work with the U.S. But the undertone pinnings of it is, it's just an ability of the timeline when they may decide to launch any type of an attack against any elements that they believe are going to be against this caliphate. So we wrote an article in the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement a long time ago about who speaks for Islam, who should speak for Islam. And you have competing factions in the region. Turkey wants to be the head of the Islam in the region, but of course it doesn't control the institutions that it used to have under the Ottoman capability. They sit in Saudi Arabia and Egypt. Egypt is a lead for Islam. Saudi wants his position of the lead for Islam, and Iran wants to represent the Shia Islam in the region. So they're constantly fighting amongst each other. In this particular case, I think the most dangerous government and capability, military-wise, that would threaten a future Israel as it, in the next decade it tries to become the lead in the Near East would be Turkey, given the fact that
So
his weapon capabilities are stronger.
Turkey is the problem child, and I can say comfortably, you are an expert in terrorism and specifically in that area in the Middle East. You are the expert.
Well, I mean, I'm an expert, like any other expert is. Whether or not people listen to what the experts say, and whether or not it's operationalized is different. My focus has been for the past number of years now is looking at an asymmetric kind of an unconventional warfare approach to how we can support and save the Christians of the Near East. That means, anybody in the Middle East and also the adjacent countries in the Near East, in this case, like South Sudan, because they're getting massacred everywhere, to include in Nigeria. And also, the new video just came out a day ago as far as the new attacks against the Christians in Syria.
Do you think Trump disarming or taking out the nuclear facilities in Iran was a good move? I mean, you're shining a light on Turkey, and we don't really hear much about Turkey. And it's kind of like now that you're putting a magnifying glass on Turkey, and you're saying, no, that's the problem, is Turkey, correct? But do you
Well, I
think
mean,
that taking out Iran's nuclear facilities, was that a good move on Trump's behalf?
look, anytime we're able to show force structure capabilities in the region is good. And there was something else being done in those facilities that needed our attention. So hitting them had a little bit more to do with that possible other type of weapon capabilities and what the nuclear capability is. So I think what had to happen had to happen. And it was on the right time scale. As to their abilities to be a nuclear power to threaten the United States, so we're never going to get there to be able to threaten us. They just didn't have that ballistic capability. They do have a very large capability to deliver EMP weapons against anybody in the region. I think that's much more of an issue for us. And frankly, if they have the ability of launching EMP weapons using the type of hypersonic missiles that North Korea has given them, then yes, I think I would attack and destroy those because that would open up the Pandora's box, and then you have much more of a broader issue to deal with, especially here in the United States. Now, Turkey does a lot of the funding for a lot of the various different religious organizational institutes in the United States to affect U.S. foreign policy, and UAE does it, Qatar does it. Now, hopefully, the Department of Justice will go after these type of capabilities. But as initially, Pam Bondi was initially given the guidance to try to track down where the money comes from. Who are the funders that are causing these issues in the various different universities that we have here in the United States that are really Islamist and socialist connected? The funding's coming from these countries. Now, in the past, Pam Bondi herself was a lobbyist for UAE. These are some of the problems you run into, just
Can we
like
trust
Kellyanne.
Pam Bondi? Do you think we can even trust Pam Bondi?
I mean, if you're in your job, we should trust you, right? That you're in your job, that whatever you did in the past should not be an influencer. I mean, even Kellyanne Conway in the past was a lobbyist for ByteDance, which is the main company that was controlling TikTok, and it
God, man.
still has a
Just whoever
large
leverages them,
sway.
whoever controls them.
Well, I mean, look, you can be a lobbyist. Anybody in the United States can go be a lobbyist. The worry is that when the lobbyists are close and they give advice to the president, is the president taking that? Now, once they're out of their jobs and I give you a specific job to do, or do you still have those kind of emotional connections or monetary connections with those different individuals that you initially lobbied for? Or are you able to break that and say, okay, I'm in a different position, I'm going to go after these people now? So I still haven't seen us going after the money that's coming out of UAE, Qatar, and Turkey, and we're not going and seizing their bank accounts until I saw see that. As they say, you could say a lot of stuff, but your actions will speak volumes, and actions are important. Even the ban, or I should say the executive order that the President Trump signed recently on TikTok, it still has 120 days that Department of Justice and Treasury will not take any steps to do anything against ByteDance. So for the 120 days, we're still kind of stuck on the old model. Until maybe some of the algorithms are going to be controlled by us, but again, the main ones that are going to be affecting the monetary pricing of how TikTok does are still going to be controlled by ByteDance. That means you're still going back there. Even a lot of people may not know, or the companies you have in the United States, sometimes they compete against each other to American companies, but a lot of them still have blood relation ties to the Chinese Communist Party. TSMC, which is a major, company for the U.S. when it comes to the chip technology, is actually the lead, have blood relations to the Green Gang, which were the initial founders of the Communist Party in China. When these people want to have effects, guess what? They're going to have the effects over generations, and they're going to have it through blood relations and marriages. Just like in the old days, you would have individuals, marry off their daughter or son to some other king or a tribal leader because they realize that's how we build those connections. And to get rid of those connections, is very difficult. I mean, you have individuals who have ties to the Chinese Communist Party that have sons and daughters here in the U.S. who have actually attended the U.S. Military Academy, graduated. Some of them might be generals in the U.S. military in the future. Turn around and tell that young man that, your great grandfather or your grandfather in this case is a communist Chinese guy, and we have to go kill him, and then see what his reaction is going to be. So
Right.
those are the issues that you get and constantly deal with. And the Chinese have used their church ties here a lot, even though they suppress churches in China to have effects here. So they do launder money through it. They do launder a lot of influence
Through the churches.
To the
I
churches that
guess
they're
what's
tied
new,
to.
right? I mean, we should all expect
Yeah.
that. I mean,
It's unfortunate, but it's a reality. You build the relationships and you use those relationships to your advantage.
So let me ask you this. So where we're at right now with this peace deal in the Middle East, what's your thoughts on that? Did Trump handle this properly? Do you think it's going to stick? Do you think this peace deal is going to stick? Or do you think this is just going to, there's a short fuse and it's going to go off anytime now?
Well, I think the mission that had to be accomplished, getting the hostages back, the only way it could have been done is the way that Trump did it. Okay.
Okay.
Otherwise, you wouldn't have the hostages back. Now, the next step, which is that you have to have all of Hamas disarmed, that may not happen. If that doesn't happen, the only way you could do it, you get to kind of say, okay, the hostages are back, the ones that are dead, you're not going to find the bodies, go after them. Look, if Israel was given full carte blanche to conduct their operations against Hamas, to go in and absolutely destroy them completely, it could have been done in a shorter timeline, I would say even in months. But look, we have weapon systems that we could, US has, that we could drop inside of Gaza that would collapse every single tunnel there. But that means that everything that is above those tunnels would collapse on top of them too. So you could literally destroy all of Gaza worse than it is now.
Well, the reason I say this is because Israel broke the peace deal already. I mean, less than 24 hours after the Sharm el-Sheikh ceasefire, I hope I said that right, ceasefire agreement was signed and summit concluded, Israel killed 9 Palestinians and injured 17 in Gaza. And then
Well, look,
also, go ahead.
as I told you, there's been a ceasefire agreement with Hezbollah, you know, but Hezbollah is still conducting operations. It doesn't
Right.
mean that Hamas has stopped conducting operations just because the hostages are back. Hezbollah is not going to want to give up their weapons, their equipment, or anything. They're going to
So
continue
what is
wanting
this
to
peace
fight.
deal then? So because it says Hamas is out publicly executing people immediately after. Immediately after there's a tiny power vacuum due to Israel pulling back, and they're already out executing people. And so what's going to happen? What does this peace deal even mean then if they're still violently attacking each other?
It means delay in time. That's pretty much how we need to look at it. From the look, Western perspective, we say, oh, okay, there's peace. There's going to be a longer peace in the region. The only way you're going to have a longer functional peace in the region, never full peace, is Israel has to be independent, capable of even arming itself instead of buying arms from others, and has to be able to be basically the alpha dog in the region. And if you're the alpha dog in the region and you put your foot on people's necks and they can't breathe, then you're pretty much successful in managing peace in the region. And if you're not that alpha dog in the region, it's not going to happen. Now, you're hoping that you could do it through financial ties, through agreements that you have, in this case, Abraham Accords, which is economic agreements with the various different countries in the region, but that doesn't mean their ideology changes. I mean, the main battlefield is right here, the 6 inches between your eyeballs, and you're gonna have to win that. And U.S. has been awful at winning that, and most Western nations, democracies, are not capable of winning that fight. The other side is able to do it, and is able to win it. Now, are you gonna be able to take Hamas and suddenly turn them into people who believe in democracy? It's not gonna happen. You couldn't even get the Iraqis to understand that. Today in Iraq, if you're a Christian and you're getting married to a Muslim, guess what? All your family members are Muslims, whether they like it or not. If today you're working under the Iraqi law, which is a constitution that we established for them, an Islamic constitution, it wasn't even an Islamic constitution of the Saddam. U.S. went in there and established that. If you work with anyone who's a Jew or in this case connected with Israel, you could be executed. This is a reality. You're not going to change their religious doctrine of what it is. And as long as somebody believes that what has been given to them is a direct word of God and has to be executed directly,
They'll die
depending
for
what
that.
the Sharia, they'll die for it. I mean, look at football fans, okay? People will ask me, I'm a White Sox fan here in Chicago. People ask me, why are you a White Sox fan? They lost 102 games this year and they've lost more. I'm just a fan. I like that team. I'm not going to change from it.
I used to say the most dangerous fighters to fight are the ones that believe that they're anointed from God, you know? And there were some Muslim fighters I fought that were like serious, like some tough guys. I still knocked them out, but that's because the switch went off, but they were tough as hell. So let me ask you this, with the Christianity, the Christians being targeted all over the globe. I know they're being targeted in Africa, in the Middle East, everywhere. Do we have to worry about that happening in America, especially with their ties to the Muslim ties to Antifa? Because we know now we're having problems with Antifa in Portland and Chicago. But what about the Muslim connection, the Muslim
Well,
Antifa
no, I mean,
connection?
the connection there is going to be executed by the communists and the people who believe that
So they're working
Christianity.
together to overthrow
Yeah,
America.
they're working together. They always work together. Look, under the Shah in Iran, before Iran became an Islamic revolution, you had casinos, you had strip clubs, you had beaches you could go that were nude beaches. The Shah was getting support and even weapons from the Israeli government. The Israeli government was looking at that time to work on his nuclear program. The Shah was the guy who said, I'm going to send all my kids, my future, to be educated. Where did he send them? He sent them to Berkeley. He sent them to MIT. He sent them to the West Point and the Air Force Academy. Well, what did they teach him over there? The Shah is bad. And those guys came back. They're like, well, the Shah is bad. You know, the structure, the same socialists that have taught our kids, taught them. And they came back and conducted a revolution. A middle class businessman in Iran, at the time I was living there, even under the Shah, could have breakfast in the morning at his house, middle, and we're not talking about upper class, would be able to fly to Paris, do shopping, do a late lunch, or fly back home and have dinner and go to sleep in their own bed. I mean, you had students who could take a $100 US bill in the 80s and light up a cigarette with it, not a cigar, but a cigarette. They had money flowing, they had a great connection. But what happened? In one day, 96% of them said, we're going to choose an Islamic Republic. And today, the largest number of executions that take place globally, 60% of the global executions on a daily basis are conducted in Iran. So it doesn't mean that it cannot snap within a second. If the imam said, this is the way it is, guess what? That's the way it is. It's unfortunate that you could have highly educated people do this. Now, there was an operation called Operation Paperclip. If your folks don't know, there's plenty of videos out there. When we went and basically defeated Germany, we took the scientists from Germany and we said, we're going to use your knowledge for our benefit, to include the knowledge that they gained during the Holocaust from what they're doing to the Jews and the camps. You know, a lot of our cold weather gear technology was developed based on what they had studied on the human body there. So we bring him here. We have to put him somewhere. We change their names. We put him in our school institutions. And you think just because we brought a fascist who was born and breastfed on the breast of a fascist ideology and put him in our institutions that they were not going to turn on and teach the next group of fascists and make them teachers at Berkeley or MIT or other institutions? We did it to ourselves. And today, this is a reality of the Arab nationalism, which started in the Middle East, which became a large part of Syria, Iraq, and Egypt. There were individuals that actually were educated here in the U.S. from those individuals who retired to Operation Paperclip that ended up taking their fascist ideology and infusing Arab nationalism into it and teaching the Arab nationals of the time. To be the type of socialist ideologues that they were, which caused a lot of problems that we have to this day. So what we're dealing with today, a lot of it was caused based on our decisions on what we believed was going to be financially much more prosperous for us in the long term, to include the issues we're dealing with China, and why we're still can't wean ourselves off of China. Because of the fact that a lot of our companies are tied not just financially to China, but through blood relations of the individuals who run our US companies that are tied by blood to the Chinese Communist Party.
So with, you see the CCP, the Muslim Brotherhood, Antifa, they all got their claws into America right now. Well, how do
Yes.
we fix this problem? I mean, is Trump going about it the right way with deportations as of right now, illegal immigrants? Because we know a lot of them are here from Iran, from Pakistan, from China, from not just Mexico. They're here from South America, MS-13, the whole thing. But I mean, they're obviously working in a coordinated effort to take out and take down America through the globalist funding. So how do we do this? I mean, now that we're taking down and we're going in Chicago, Portland, different cities, ICE is raiding houses, all this stuff. What do we do about the Muslims here? What do we do about the Sharia Muslims here that are forming these communities in Dearborn and in Plano?
I mean,
They're the
Sharia law
biggest
is,
danger to me.
yeah, the Sharia law is Sharia law. If I can convince one individual out of 100,000 that you have to kill the infidel, regardless if they're a poor person who's illiterate in the Middle East or somebody who's a doctor who's sitting in a military base in Texas, I could educate you to try to kill people for that
So
ideology.
this is a
It's just
kill
a
religion.
reality.
It's a kill religion.
Well, I mean, it isn't the Sharia law. It has those. Now, it depends on what I can teach you on using in that Sharia law. If I say this is the interpretation and you're not able to interpret it, but I, as a mullah, tell you this is what the interpretation is and you believe it and you buy into it, guess what? That's it. I've operationalized you for what I want. And, it's just like those young men and women that I could tell them, I mean, you name an organization Antifa because, hey, who can be against an organization that is anti-fascist? But it's the most fascist organization you can have. It's basically the brown shirts and the black shirts of World War II that were used in Italy and Germany. It's no different. It's just that you just name it in a certain way. And if I can sell you the sizzle on the steak, you'll buy anything. Regardless, right? I just gotta know how I gotta market something to you, and if I could market that to you, then it is what it is. Sharia law to me that has no place in democracies, but the only way you're going to be able to stop it is you have to have people in DC who are willing to take a bill, propose it, and say, hey, look, Sharia law cannot supersede U.S. constitutional law and civil law. And then if you could do that, then you've pretty much crushed it. Who's willing to do that? Go find me somebody who's willing to put that bill in. I don't think you'll find anybody who's willing to do that, because they'll be like, oh, well, there's a religious connotation to it. Well, if the religious connotation of that particular part of Sharia law says you gotta kill the other guy, and it is what it is. I mean, there's portions of it that are really, if you look at it, are anti-women, but it's part of what somebody has been taught
But these.
to say that this is something that you cannot interpret, and it can be only interpreted through the mullahs for the betterment of what they decide to do. If that mullah decides, I'm going to operationalize somebody again, guess what? Then you'll have your attacks on the coal that recently happened, and anniversary coming up at 9/11.
But they're enforcing their beliefs on everybody else in the area, from what I'm hearing. In Dearborn, Michigan, people move in, they're kicking them out. They want them not to eat pork. They can't sell pork at a grocery store. They're yelling at the women walking around if they're not dressed
Yeah, but
appropriately.
if again, there's laws that are on the books that won't allow you to do that. Who's enforcing it? That's the issue, and
Right.
who's willing to enforce it? Look, I know that here in Chicago, mainstream immigration. Yes, you got to go in and you got to remove the bad guys. There's a lot of Chinese PLA guys that actually made it through the borders. I haven't heard any of those guys being deported yet. Now, with that said, though. When you come in here, though, I think in Chicago, where I am myself, actually, and I actually had a show. I interviewed Tom Holman, on my show. You come in here, you got to go to the right places to go after the bad guys. If you're just going in and removing folks, and some of these guys are not at the high level of what we would consider to be those guys that conduct operations running drugs, I mean, the issue of Chicago doesn't start in Chicago. It starts in right across the border in Indiana. That's where the headquarters of all the bad guys and the drug running takes place into the Chicago. Are you in that area? No, I don't see any of the operations there. Are you in the low village where all the bad guys hang out here? I haven't seen any of the operations that have gone in and taken out the majority of leaders. So if you're not going to go after them, you're going to end up suddenly picking up some guy who's been here for years. Yes, they overextended their stay, but they're a member of the community that isn't causing those problems. Guess what? Then it becomes an issue where you're not going to be able to win the information operation, and you may even turn some of the folks that actually initially voted for Trump against him in the midterms. So my recommendation has been for a long time, if you really want to go after the money and a bad guy, guess what? A lot of the drug dealer money sits in U.S. Homes here, okay? And if you go in there and you raid those homes and you take that money, that guy ain't gonna pick up the phone and call the police and say, hey, somebody came and stole my human trafficking money or drug money. Is available. Go after them. Whether or not the advisors understand it or are capable, or if we have the intel that's going to be able to get you to go after that, I don't know. You want the intel, you got to work with some of the bad guys. I told the Republican Party here in Illinois when I was asked, how do we win on the West Side? I said, you got to work with the gang members. They're like, well, we don't want to work with gang members. I was like, who the hell do you think is moving all the ballots for the Democrats here? You
Yeah.
don't want to work with them? That's your choice. But that guy's still going to conduct his operations. You want to find out where all the bad guys are that are conducting the shootings in the south side of Chicago? The gang member who's the lead for that is sitting in the northern suburbs in his house.
Yes,
he's not
yeah.
he doesn't have a house over there. His house is where he knows he's going to be secured. Go ask him. But the problem is, like I said, a lot of the operations that are taking place are not, to me, from the Department of Justice targeting the dollars. Right now, half of the accounts that sit in UAE should have been already hacked. And all that money should have been sucked out. You don't want to do it at the U.S. and get another country to do it. Tell the Israelis go and freaking suck up all their money,
Right.
or somebody else, because that's the money that is driving the train on terror operations. Same thing should happen with the country of Turkey. Now, you don't want to have Try not to be able to bring drugs through the southern border, then you could do two things. You could either go after those Chinese leaders, and those businessmen should have their freaking head pop open suddenly, sitting somewhere in Malaysia, and then they'll realize, well, you know what, maybe we shouldn't be involved in the drug trade issue. Or just like you took out the scientists that are sitting in that were in Iran, guess what? The fentanyl issue is because the cartel has tried to find Americans who are willing to help with the precursors to make a better product for them. They can't find them. Well, they go find those guys in China, and because they don't know how to make it, and China shows up and actually gives them the worst deal possible. Why aren't those guys being killed every day? Why isn't the Central Intelligence Agency, having operations to wipe those guys out? Now they've been designated as cartels, anybody who's tied to them. The network is wide, long, a lot of businesses tied to it. There's a lot of non-governmental organizations. Why have you not gone after any of the 501c3s that initially funded and supported the immigration moves all the way into the United States? Why are we allowing China to still, deforest the Darien Gap and establish, capabilities there? So you want to go after it, you got to go after the head of the snake and
Right.
make it pay.
Well,
If you're not gonna do it, then you got
I
what you
agree
got.
with you 100%. But so do you, are you, I'm under the belief that at some point these cells that are here in America will be activated. However, it's going to happen at the right time. And if they're working with Antifa and the CCP, they're all in this together. Cartel warfare, I'm surprised that hasn't even kicked off yet. But I mean, is it just, are they waiting for the opportune time? What's your thoughts on that? Do you think that the cells will be activated in America for the takedown of America at the opportune time? They just don't want to hit that switch prematurely. And if so, when?
No, you can look. You could take out an entire train by using a rock. I could
Right.
dump a rock on a train track and derail a train. It ain't that difficult. I mean, you could take out a jet fighter using frozen chickens, for God's sakes. I mean, if a duck can go through a plane and freaking have it land in the waters and off of New York, you could do the same thing. I think conducting these type of unconventional warfare operations are not difficult. Look what happened to Israel. Israel, majority of its funding was going to what? Fighting against these enemies. And October 7th, guys on bicycles were able to hit them. Why? Because that's what they trained for. So yes, it is easier to fight and to conduct an unconventional warfare operation than it is to
So it's like
do the
America
type
is like
of fighting
sitting a
that.
sitting duck right now.
Well, it's always been.
Right.
The only reason is maybe the guys at the top are getting their pay. So as long as they're getting their money, they're paid, they're not going to use it. But if there one day happens that they're in a point that they're about to disappear, yes, of course they would use it as a last resort. Look, you're never going to be able to defeat the Chinese Communist Party because we, United States, emboldened them. We financed them. We supported them. We gave them the technology. They could be sitting on the dark side of the moon, and who the hell knows what mining operations I want to do is on them, but using our tech. But with that said, we could always take out their teeth of the dragon. You may not defeat it, but you could, defang somebody. And whether or not our government is established that way to be able to do that is the issue. Again, if these folks are getting their money, if the cartel is still making money off of users in the United States, there's no need to conduct operations to where, it goes after a point to where U.S. launches its entire force capability and structure against destroying those cartels. U.S. unfortunately will always use Americans will use drugs on a daily basis. We're a drug using nation. You have a headache, take a pill. You're fat, take a Ozempic. We
Yeah,
always use it.
instant.
So yeah, so we're not a nation that is going to wean off of that. There's going to be some level of drugs coming in here. I know that the cartel guys rather be giving heroin to users here. Why? Because Heroin will keep you longer as a user and put more money in their pockets than
Yeah,
it could give you
fentanyl
a
seems like
fentanyl pill
it's
and
a
kills
bad
you right
business.
away.
Yeah,
Yeah,
fentanyl seems like it's a bad business, man.
is a
Not a
bad
very good
business.
business model.
It's not a good business model. Now, if you make a deal, let's say, hey, I don't want fentanyl here. Anybody who's bringing fentanyl has to be killed. You could, we'll look past the heroin coming in.
Right.
Then guess what? They're getting their money, and at least they're not killing our Americans using fentanyl. And they're policing themselves internally, so you don't have that much of a fight taking place internally in their systems, because they also have a hierarchy they get a protect. Now, people say, well, you can't make that deal. Okay, don't make the deal. Then go out there.
Yeah.
Americans, of course, for whatever reason, they're not changing. I mean, we just, the biggest killer in the recent years has been the drugs that were put together because
Yeah.
of the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, they're still striking major deals for themselves for the benefit of those pharmaceutical companies globally with the WHO. Once they reach an agreement, regardless if the US is part of the WHO or not, guess what? That money, that amount of dollars that is generated is going to be significant. Even with the announcement of the Stargate, which is what initially Trump was looking at when it comes to future AI tech, you're still bringing the same freaking pharmaceutical companies in.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're getting rid of these people. These folks are going to be around. These concepts are going to be around. These networks are going to be around. You're not going to be able to kill the entire network, because sometimes killing the network may mean that you have to kill folks that you have inside of the network, and that's just not going to happen. So the only thing you could do is manage it as best as possible, and try to wean off something. Once you create something over a 5-year period, if you want to reverse it, it takes 5 years to reverse it and then aim it in a new direction. We're talking about decades of work, and sometimes some of the issues that we're dealing with have been put together over the half a century. And that's long after you and me have become fairy dust. That's long after anybody even remembers the name Trump,
Right.
in the history books, if there's still a U.S. operational. So it will take some time. Our only thing that's been a saving grace for us has been the fact that we have weapon capabilities that tomorrow. I can assure you, if we ever go to war with China and we use those weapon capabilities, we'll destroy China. It won't
Wow.
exist. Uh,
Wow.
but but that's the only thing that's been a saving grace, right?
Jeez.
That we've had.
Well, he made me feel
So
a little bit better.
no, I'm telling you, if we'd ever get to that existence, our existence has been threatened. I don't think anybody can. They'll be shocked what may pop out of the woodworks or the
Wow.
sky. We're able to do that. I don't think that's an issue. There's stuff that I can, of course, talk here
Right.
on a Zoom about, and we'll never talk about it. I'm comfortable in that. But when it comes to policy, there's things we could do. I mean, even now, I had written an article in 2015 called New Power Relations, which was a speech that Wang Yi had given. And he gave it in Peking Institute as far as what China-U.S. relationship has to be. Susan Rice, when she took the stage in George Washington University, we were waiting to see what her counter would be. And she actually talked about the word how to actualize that concept. That concept is what has led to the war between Russia and the rest of Europe. It is that concept that was still what happened under the Obama administration, under the first Trump administration, under the Biden administration, and I still see us kind of hedging that way under the second Trump administration. If the Trump administration wanted to really push away from the concept of new power relations that was initially introduced by Wang Yi, then TikTok should have been killed here, period. And you could have turned around and very simply said that Taiwan is an independent nation, a sovereign nation, and we are going to support our ally. Those few words are not coming out of the administration, and
Right,
Trump has
right.
never said it. Why? Because, that definitely tells you that we're not following the new power relations model anymore. And the new power relation model was basically a concept that you see the majority of Asia to the United to China. U.S. takes an internal look, actually retreats within its borders, worries about a little bit South America, which we are doing today, and looks internally on how to fix internal issues. Europe and Russia would have to be the victor in Europe, and everybody competes for resources in Africa. That model is what basically we're still seeing now, even on the second Trump administration. So until I see an actual action that is driving us away from the new power relations model that was initially introduced by Wang Yi, it seems that the same thing has happened under Obama first, Trump, Biden second, Trump, and who knows what happens under whoever is going to be next, hopefully JD Vance, but it seems like he's following the same trend still.
Well, here you are as a young man, Sarji Sangari. Wow. So here we are, CEO of NECSE, which is the Northeast Center of Strategic Engagement. Sarji, thank you so much for joining me. Where do people find you? I would like to have you on. I mean, the intel you're giving me and my audience is absolutely second to none. So I'd love to have you on more times if it's possible.
No, I am anytime. I hope it helps. Look, nations talk to each other, I would tell the folks, through open press. And sometimes just go read the open press and you'll be able to garner more than anything else about what nations are thinking. But at the end of the day, it comes to basically what economic deals they're going to strike for their own benefit. And sometimes those deals have nothing to do about democracy and freedoms of people overseas. If it did, the Christians of the Middle East would not be being butchered right now, and we wouldn't be striking a deal with the Syrian government leader who actually killed American forces, in the past, and who wants to maybe establish his own caliphate in the long term. The only thing we have offered the Christians of the Middle East is, once you find a way to get the hell out of there,
Yeah.
instead of like,
But we
on,
need to really start looking at Turkey. We got to really
yeah,
start.
Turkey is the leader of Muslim Brotherhood. That's it. It's a NATO ally. It will play both sides. You have to, I mean, they're going to have elections in the future. Erdogan is still setting the stage to have his people be in a position of power, even if he's not the lead. But Islamic Muslim Brotherhood working with the socialist communists
You look at
is
Zohan, or what's his name, Zohar, in New
you
York.
have
There's a prime example of it right there.
that's it. You got to go in there and you're gonna attack that those that you got to cause a rift in there. If you don't cause a rift and break those two apart from each other, it's gonna be very ugly
It's gonna get
very
ugly
soon.
here in America, isn't it?
We'll see.
All right.
We'll see. You never know. But I always prepare for the worst, and hope for the best.
All right, sounds good to me. Sarji Sangari, hopefully I'm saying that right. No disrespect there. It's a different kind of name for me.
It's good. I've been called sangria before. People have drinks on their minds. So,
can I get you back
Sargus.
on? I'm sure my audience is going to love you. They're going to want to see you back again. There's so much intel here, so much experience. Can I get you back on at some point?
Yeah, anytime. I don't. Anytime. If it helps, it helps. It's just information is what people do about it.
And do you want people to go to this site here?
Yeah, they could go to necsc.net and then, of course, unitedassyrianappeal.net, which is our 501c3 where we raise money to support the Christian Assyrians of the Middle East
Oh, so they
region.
donate right here.
Yeah, if they donate here, we'll take them to that site, I believe. If
Awesome.
not there, go to unitedassyrianappeal itself. .net is better. Yeah, right there. And then you'll be able to support us and we support them. With Christmas coming up, we do send some money over there at least for support for as long as there's Christmas, I guess.
Wow.
Until one day we don't have Christians on the ground.
All right, Sarjeez, thank you so much for joining me, sir. And
It'll
then
do
we
anytime.
appreciate your service as well.
Thank you. God
God
bless.
bless you.